Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's back at the Le Show Dome, and it's just you and me today. I know you're usually just you. I don't mean just you. I mean you, fabulous you. But me, I'm usually kidding around. But when my affiliate in upstate New York canceled the broadcast a few weeks ago, listener wrote to me, said, well, I asked the station why they canceled your show. And the response was, well, the kids who listen at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon didn't get the satire. Parenthetically, I've been replaced by Bob Edwards Weekend, you know, for the kids. But so I decided, hey, kids, I don't want to confuse you anymore. So it's just the straight stuff today. Like this. Deadline Washington. A high-profile test of a missile-destroying laser aboard a converted Boeing 747 has been postponed for a third time because of a technical glitch. You enemies out there, don't be attacking us yet. It's a technical glitch. This is according to the Missile Defense Agency. Sorry, that was some satire, kids. I'll flag it whenever it happens. The agency cited an unspecified problem with a tracking camera's cooling system. Now you got to cool the camera. The hell is that? Repairs could not be completed to fit the test window available at a range off the California coast on Tuesday night. So if you're going to be attacking us, be fair now, attack within the window. Otherwise, come on. The goal is to shoot down a mock ballistic missile more than 100 miles away, twice the range demonstrated in a maiden test in February, using the airborne chemical oxygen iodine laser. That's probably why you have to cool the camera. Either the oxygen or iodine is heating it up. Army Lieutenant General Patrick... Kids, that wasn't satire. That was just speculation. Army Lieutenant General Patrick O'Reilly, the agency head, told reporters earlier on Tuesday the follow-on test was postponed over the past 2 weeks because of successive technical problems. The first was with a stand that holds the target. Don't you targets move now. Trying to destroy you. The second was a problem on one of the tracking system's software modules, prompting a reboot. We've learned so much from that first test that our conclusion was we can operate at twice the range we thought, he said. The delays, he said, reflect concerns with safety and a limited pool of target missiles. The agency expects to be ready to run the test again at the time of the next window. The news about the oil off the Gulf Coast after the reassuring reports from the administration. Now, why would they be doing that earlier this month? Have been a bit different. But here's some good news. Fishery scientist James Cowan wasn't put off when a private consulting firm contacted him about helping BP with its oil spill research. Indeed, he welcomed the opportunity. I don't want BP to take samples and give them the wrong information, so I'd just as soon help, he said. For instance, when a team under the direction of NOAA and BP went out with an acoustic instrument to verify the oil plumes, they came back empty-handed until Cowan told the consulting firm the team was using frequencies that couldn't pick up the oil droplets at those depths. He suggested a different technique, and now, quote, no one can deny the existence of the plumes, which many did for a very long time, unquote. Cowan has been careful to give his advice pro bono, uneasy about the consulting contract BP offered him, which would have banned him from discussing or publishing any data collected on their dime for up to 3 years. Now, in a largely unexpected and welcome move, BP has revised its contracts to remove those restrictions. NOAA has also relaxed its own restrictions on publishing data, so scientists are hoping the whole process will be less adversarial than they feared. The change comes after a public cry of outrage sparked by a damning story in an Mobile, Alabama paper that blasted BP for buying up Gulf scientists by the department. So, no longer not free to publish their findings are the scientists who work for BP. And that's the good news, ladies and gentlemen. Not kidding around here. No satire. Speaking of which, we are 8 days away from August 30th, the fifth anniversary, August 29th, actually, the fifth anniversary of the flooding of New Orleans, August 30th, the date on which my film about the flooding of New Orleans appears in theaters nationwide one night only. You may have seen me or heard me talking about it on cable TV this week. And now you're hearing me talk about it on public radio. And this may be the only place on public radio. I hope not. But anyway, there's a website, there are tickets, all of that. But it's one night, and if you've heard Ivor Van Heerden and Bob B. and Maria Garzino and John Barry in interviews on this show over the past three and a half years talking about their findings, talking about what they've concluded were the reasons behind the flooding of New Orleans and the possibility it can happen again, the whole story laid out quite carefully in The Big Uneasy, August 30th. And there's no call to action there. Do what you want. Hello, welcome to the show. From the basement of the Le Show Dome, from the home of the homeless, from the edge of America, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. No satire. Don't want to confuse the kids. We want to inspire the kids. What's the best way to do that, ladies and gentlemen? News of the Olympic movement. Did you know, by the way, that he was referred to as Johnny Williams when he was a jazz arranger? Now he's John. You wouldn't want a Johnny writing your Olympic theme, would you? The tower, the Olympic Tower, its creators hope would be a lasting legacy for East London once the games are over, may never get off the ground unless the creators remember to install pipes for the toilets. A review of the tower's design by the British government's architecture watchdog has found that the artwork still has a long way to go before it can convince planning chiefs that the 5 or 6 million dollar project will do what it set out to do. The Commission for Architecture and the Built Environment, CABE, advises the Government on Architecture and Urban Planning, published a review concluding the sculpture's design is not yet resolved in sufficient detail to receive planning approval. Its panel of experts say a series of issues has been overlooked in the tower structure, including how sewage pipes will be incorporated without compromising the overall aesthetics. You kids can do your own satire there. The tower, which goes by the official name of ArcelorMittal Orbit, sure it does, is expected to become Britain's tallest public artwork and will enable hundreds of visitors every day to take in sweeping panoramas of the Olympic Park and London skyline. It will be one of the first buildings visitors encounter when they come through the entrance of the Olympic Park and stands, meaning they'll be ready to go to the toilet because they've just had to be in the line for security for 2.5 hours. Funded by a donation from steel billionaire Lakshmi Mittal, Britain's richest man, who knew? The tower is intended to be a lasting legacy for the area. But CABE's four-page critique has concluded that further work is required on the design of the entrance pavilion and power supply unit, as well as the elevators, stairs, and the way it integrates with the wider Olympic Park. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln. In particular, the report's author said more thought is needed to be paid to the ancillary buildings around the tower, where security checks will be carried out. There's a danger that such mundane requirements will downgrade the quality of the orbit as an artwork, the report stated. There are also concerns that despite the tower's height, it could still be overshadowed by the cauldron, which will hold the Olympic flame. The current planning application for the cauldron is a large concrete structure taller than the orbit tower. This would call into question both the location for the orbit and its height if a second tall structure were constructed in such close proximities. The tower is already on a tight deadline. Get those sewer pipes in. Because we want a tower worthy of the Olympic movement. And by we, I mean you. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. I'm inspired just thinking about the tower. Ladies and gentlemen, the Rupert Murdoch watch now. Not a special commemorative timepiece. Oh, no. Just keeping track of his Rupness. A few weeks ago, speaking with analysts on regarding News Corporation's earnings, you know, financial analysts, Rupert Murdoch sounded very pleased with the fact that he's put a paywall up in front of the websites of the Times of London, the good newspaper he owns. With our paywall around the Times, we've had an encouraging number of people subscribing at a good price, he said. We're not going to release those numbers at this stage, but we think we're on the right strategy, and we think it's going well. However, the Business Insider reports a different picture in terms of the statistics that now have come out. The Times has lost 1.2 million, million online readers in Britain since they started charging people to look at the newspaper. According to ComScore, which I guess scores your comms, no, kids, I wasn't kidding about that. Come on. The combined number of unique visitors, that is to say people, I guess, with their own DNA, the combined number of unique visitors to the two new sites has fallen to 1.6 million in July from 2.2 million in June and 2.79 million in May. It's plummeting. The average number of minutes each user spent on the site was 7.6 in May, 4 in July. Even the people who are paying for it aren't staying. Paying, not staying. Well, page views have dropped from 29 million in May to 9 million in July. In its first month, fully behind the paywall, the Times of London has registered 15,000 online subscribers. Of course, if he doesn't get enough money from that, he could also always just underpay his television. Already doing. The second largest shareholder, by the way, in News Corp, parent company of Fox News, has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to causes linked to the imam planning to build a Muslim community center near in Lower Manhattan near Ground Zero. This from Yahoo News. Who knew Yahoo News? Who knew who news used? According to the reports, Saudi Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, not the richest man in Britain, this is a Saudi prince, owns 7% of News Corporation. We knew that. He has directly funded Imam Rauf's project. He's the imam behind the community center in Lower Manhattan, to the tune of more than $300,000. Rupert's partner is funding the Ground Zero Mosque imam? Period. John Cook of Yahoo News, who knew that Prince Al-Walid's personal charity, the Kingdom Foundation, donated $305,000 to Muslim Leaders of Tomorrow, a project sponsored by two of Rauf's initiatives, the American Society for Muslim Advancement and the Cordoba Initiative, which is building the Manhattan Community Center. Prince Al-Walid in the past has funded a number of Islamic organizations that have been criticized by Fox News commentators. Well, that's freedom of speech, babe. Al-Walid donated $500,000 to the Council on American Islamic Relations, which has been repeatedly denounced on Fox News by a woman who's sort of leading the anti-Ground Zero Mosque, so-called, project, Pamela Geller, and others, as a terror group. The donation from Al-Walid, Rupert's partner, came in 2002. Rauf's numerous ties to the Council on American Islamic Relations have been cited by the mosque's opponents as a justification for imputing terrorist sympathies to him. Prince Al-Walid owns an estimated $2.5 billion worth of News Corporation stock. Rupert Murdoch recently took a stake in the Prince's Middle East media conglomerate, Rotana Group. They're reportedly working together on launching an Arabic news network that will compete with Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya. And it will be all fair and balanced. So, news of Rupert. The Rupert Watch continues, ladies and gentlemen, whenever events warrant. And I think they've issued an events warrant form. Now, news of the warm, won't you?
Listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
While Arctic sea ice has been diminishing in recent decades, the Antarctic sea ice extent has been increasing slightly. Researchers from Georgia Tech set out to provide an explanation for that seeming paradox of increasing Antarctic sea ice in a warming climate. Paper appears in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. We wanted to understand this apparent paradox so we can better understand what might happen to the Antarctic sea ice in the coming century, says Jiping Liu from Georgia Tech. Currently, as the atmosphere warms, the hydrological cycle accelerates and there's more precipitation in the southern ocean surrounding Antarctica. That, mostly in the form of snow, stabilizes the upper ocean and insulates it from the ocean heat below. This insulating effect reduces the amount of melting occurring below the sea ice. In addition, snow has a tendency to reflect atmospheric heat away from the sea ice, which reduces melting from above. So far, so good. However, the climate models predict greenhouse gases will continue to increase, which will result in the sea ice melting at a faster rate from both above and below. Increased warming of the atmosphere will heat the upper ocean, which will increase the melting of the sea ice from below. In addition, increased warming will also result in a reduced level of snowfall, but more rain. Because rain doesn't reflect heat back the way snow does, this will enhance the melting of the Antarctic sea ice from above. That's what they calculate. Global plant productivity that was once on the rise with warming temperatures and a lengthened growing season is now on the decline because of regional drought, according to a new study of NASA satellite data. Plant productivity is a measure of the rate of the photosynthesis process that green plants use to convert solar energy, carbon dioxide, and water to sugar, oxygen, and eventually plant tissue. Compared with a 6% increase in plant productivity during the 80s and 90s, the decline observed over the last decade is only 1%. The shift, however, could impact food security, biofuels, and the global carbon cycle. Researchers at the University of Montana, I didn't know they had one, in Missoula, discovered the global shift from an analysis of NASA satellite data. The discovery comes from an analysis of plant productivity data from NASA's Terra satellite, combined with other growing season climate data, including temperature, solar radiation, and water. We see this as a bit of surprise and potentially significant on a policy level because previous interpretations suggested global warming might actually help plant growth around the world, said one of the researchers. The combined global land and ocean surface temperature made this past July the second warmest on record behind 1998 and the warmest average January through July on record. The global average land surface temperature for July and January was warmest on record. The global ocean surface temperature for July was the fifth warmest, and for the whole first 6 months, the second warmest on record behind 1998. That's from NASA's National Climatic Data Center, based on records going back to 1880. Did I say NASA? NOAA. Climate change is causing higher air and water temperatures along the east coast of the United States. These changes have shrunk. Honey, I shrunk the kids. Kids, that was satire. These changes have shrunk the geographic region where blue mussels are able to survive, according to findings by University of South Carolina researchers published in the Journal of Biogeography. Mytilus edulis, or blue mussels, used to live along the east coast as far south as Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, but now exist only as far south as Delaware. Most plants and animals have geographic ranges defined by northern and southern limits. In many cases, they're thought to be controlled by temperature. If it becomes too hot, the limits will shift. However, linking changes in geographic range to changes in climate is difficult unless long-term records in distribution are compared to equally long-term records of weather. So researchers explored how survival of mussels changed across latitudes and decades with respect to temperature. As recently as 60 years ago, these mussels thrived as far south as North Carolina. Due to air and water temperature increases over the past 60 years, they no longer survive throughout the year south of Lewes, Delaware. And populations to the north now experience higher rates of mortality than in the past. These findings are significant, I guess, for healthcare costs for mussels? No, because they show that recent climate change is affecting the organisms along our coast. These mussels are a very important part of the food chain, help clean the water, and are farmed commercially. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature, don't you know, of this very broadcast. Like to see.
the CIA, because they take me for a foreign spy. They won't need no lie detector. All they'll have to do is make me look into my mother's eyes. And I'll tell them anything they like. Oh, Mother dear, she can see inside. Mother dear, I've nowhere to hide. Oh, Mother dear, kept me warm and safe. Mother dear, I'll never lose my faith in Mother dear. Oh, Mother dear, Mother dear, oh, Mother dear. Mother dear, did I spoil your plans? Mother dear, I do the best I can.
This is Le Show, satire-free edition for the kids. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Are you sitting down? Because this is 2 weeks' worth of apologies right here.
We're so sorry.
Last week, pledge drive and other things going on. So, yes, the apologies of the last 2 weeks. So, of course, top of the list, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, of course, apologized for using the N-word several times during the on-air conversation with a caller last week. I was attempting to make a philosophical point and I articulated the N-word all the way out. More than one time. And that was wrong. And I'll say it again. That was wrong, she said. She's now quitting the radio to get back her First Amendment rights. I think you have your First Amendment rights. They don't include getting paid. Look at me. Deadline Washington White House spokesman and President Barack Obama's close aide, Robert Gibbs, apologized after a newspaper published an interview in which he took some rough jabs at the left wing of the Democratic Party. In an interview with The Hill, political newspaper, Gibbs took swipes at people he described as, quote, the professional left. They wouldn't be satisfied if Dennis Kucinich was president, he said. I hear these people saying he's like George Bush. These people ought to be drug tested, Gibbs said. I mean, it's crazy. Gibbs later said he had spoken inartfully. I watch too much cable. Day after day, it gets frustrating. And I don't think he means the adult scooter commercials. A Democratic New Hampshire state lawmaker has resigned after speculating on Facebook after about Sarah Palin's death. A second New Hampshire Democrat and activist running for the state legislature is apologizing for the same gaffe. Responding to a thread on Facebook, New Hampshire State Representative Timothy Horrigan posted a message that read, well, a dead Palin would be even more dangerous than a live one. And if she was dead, she couldn't commit any more gaffes. Later, Horrigan posted on his website a resignation letter to the New Hampshire House. I wish to resign, effective immediately, and to discontinue my re-election campaign. I apologize for thoughtless remarks I made, which have brought this House into disrepute. I enjoyed my time in the House. And he apologized specifically to the newspaper, the New Hampshire Union Leader, for making comments about Sarah Palin, which could be and were misconstrued. She is, as far as I know, not a bad person at all, and she certainly deserves to live a long and happy life. New Hampshire Democratic Party Chairman Ray Buckley told the Union Leader that he made the right choice. Meanwhile, Democratic activist Keith Halloran, candidate for the New Hampshire House, also apologized for posting on Facebook a death wish for Palin. Or for Cutie. See, kids? Emmett Smith, football player, apologized via his Twitter account and on national television for not mentioning his alma mater, Florida, in his induction speech into the Pro Football Hall of Fame or the Pro Football Fall of Fame. Japan has offered another apology to South Korea for the suffering inflicted during its colonization of the Korean Peninsula up to the end of World War II. In an attempt to forge better ties with Seoul, Prime Minister Naoto Kan expressed deep remorse for the tremendous harm caused. The gesture has angered some conservative politicians in Japan, fearful it will spark renewed calls for compensation. But South Korea welcomed the move. Republican San Diego Mayor Jerry Sanders apologized to the city's gay and lesbian residents for not having always supported same-sex marriage. Dayline Louisville, WHAS radio talk show host Mandy Connell said she regrets and cannot explain how she came to use the phrase half-breed to describe President Obama on the air a couple weeks ago. I was embarrassed and shocked that it came out of my mouth, and I sort of stumbled when I said it. I don't know why I said it. It's not a word I use on any occasion, ever. She apologized for the remark at the beginning of her program the next day. Maybe her body was occupied by the spirit of Dr. Laura for a day. Senator Al Franken apologized for being rude to Senator Mitch McConnell as the Senate's top Republican was winding up a solemn debate on the nomination of Elena Kagan to the Supreme Court. Franken was presiding over the Senate as McConnell explained his opposition to President Obama's nominee. A Senate GOP aide said Franken made theatrical gestures and whispered under his breath as the Kentucky senator spoke. It was distracting enough that McConnell went up to the former comedian and said, "This isn't Saturday Night Live, Al." I guess that means it must have been funny. The aide spoke on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the situation. Franken later went to McConnell's office to try to apologize in person, but McConnell wasn't there. He delivered a handwritten apology and issued a statement that said McConnell was entitled to give his speech with the presiding officer just listening respectfully. He blamed his former partner, Tom Davis. No, he did not. Congressional candidate Mike Pompeo. Would this be one of the last days of Pompeo? He issued an apology this week to opponent Raj Goyal, saying his campaign accidentally directed Pompeo supporters to an online blog post assailing Goyal's religion and ethnic heritage. This is down in Kansas. A Pompeo statement said his office inadvertently posted a link to a tremendously offensive blog post. The post in question referred to Goyal, a U.S.-born citizen of Indian heritage, as, quote, "just another turban topper we don't need in Congress or any political office that deals with the U.S. Constitution, Christianity, and the United States of America," unquote. The post was written by Bob Pinkstaff of Wichita, a retired Marine gunnery sergeant who claims the country is being invaded by Mexicans and Muslims and that only Christians should hold public office. The Mexican-Muslim connection. But that's supposedly according to Goyal. Kids, I did it again. For the second year in a row, a candidate for U.S. Senate has apologized in the aftermath of the Fancy Farm Picnic, the traditional start of the fall campaigning season in Kentucky. Who knew? This year it was Rand Paul, the Republican nominee, who said in a national radio interview that he worried someone in the raucous crowd would throw beer at him on the stage. The suggestion that people at the event would throw something other than political insults didn't sit well with some at St. Jerome Catholic Church, which hosts the political speaking as part of the picnic. "I was kind of taken aback, really," said Mark Wilson, who with his wife Lori heads the committee in charge of the speeches. "We could have done without them comments." That's not an interpolation. That's the direct quote. Beer is not served at the event, which is in dry territory. Yes, such a thing still exists. And there's never been a problem with alcohol or with anyone throwing something at the politicians. Then Paul apologized in a statement written by his campaign manager. Dr. Paul was trying to convey just how enthusiastic the crowd was and did not mean to imply there was alcohol being served. Rand has always enjoyed Fancy Farm, thinks it's a wonderful event, and apologizes to anyone he may have offended. Fancy Farm! That's pure goodness. Doesn't that sound like a... Yeah. Philadelphia Eagles offensive lineman Todd Hermans has apologized for an anti-gay tweet. This Twitter thing's getting people in trouble. The NFL player took to Twitter to protest the gay content in HBO's vampire series True Blood. "So, caught up with True Blood last night, not a fan of how they get you hooked with first two seasons, then bring on a barrage of homosexuality," he messaged to his over 2,000 followers. 2,000. "Hey, I'm almost at got 11,000. Come join me." Philadelphia Inquirer columnist John Gonzalez responded to the message and asked for clarification. Harriman's message back, "I have no issues with homosexuality, to each his own. It's just not for me." The Philadelphia Inquirer columnist followed up asking Harriman's how a gay Eagles employee would feel about his remarks. "Like I said, to each his her own," was the reply. By noon, the conversation had been removed, according to the columnist who wrote about the incident, and Harriman's followed up with the apology. "After speaking with Eagles management, I realized that my tweet earlier was insensitive and tasteless, and for this, I deeply apologize. It was not my intention to offend or hurt anyone." Imagine, a football player doesn't intend to hurt anyone. Refreshing. 4 days after threatening to slug a reporter, DeKalb County, I believe that's Illinois, Georgia. School Board Vice President Zipporah Roberts issued an apology. Came the same day the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported the organization of DeKalb Educators, the district's largest teachers union, wanted her to resign, saying she's a bad example for children. A few days earlier, she threatened to slug a CBS reporter during an interview about the school board member's two daughters working for the school system. In anger and frustration, I inappropriately threatened the reporter. I apologize to the reporter for my outburst. Previously, school board vice chairman Roberts had said she did not regret her outburst. Former Edmonton Capitals. Is that a hockey team or a football team? I thought the Oilers was their hockey team. So this must be, who knows? It's a team in Edmonton, Alberta. It's Canada. Anyway, he apologized for a baseball. He apologized for a homophobic tirade, here we go again, against openly gay Golden Baseball League umpire Bill. Oh, I think we had this on the air already. And it was so good. Tyra Banks has issued a statement about the America's Next Top Model trailer featuring a contestant with seemingly the smallest waist ever. The clip showed Anne, 6'2", auditioning for the series, and the judges beside themselves about the size of her midsection. Miss J was even able to wrap his hands around her. I'm reading this. So here's what Tyra said. In an effort to create a fun and entertaining sneak peek of the upcoming cycle, America's Next Top Model released a trailer that was edited in a way that misconstrued our overarching message. As a leader in celebrating and promoting healthy body image, I must admit I regrettably didn't see this clip before it was released to the public. With multiple top model departments, it's just impossible to review everything. But on behalf of the top model team, these were not the intentions, and we have truly apologized for any confusion, anger, or disappointment. It may have caused. The BBC has apologized after weatherman, you saw this on cable news all week, weatherman Thomas Schaffernacker was caught making a rude gesture live on air. He raised his middle finger after news presenter Simon McCoy jokingly said his forecast would be 100% accurate. I love that banter between news people and weather people, don't you? It's so much better than actually getting information, don't you think? Memphis City Council member Janice Fullilove sent a letter of apology to the president of the National Black Caucus of Local Elected Officials for what she described as over-the-top behavior at a party last week. Fullilove, regional director of the National Black Caucus of Local Elected Officials, said she engaged in dancing, including pole dancing, on a river cruise during the group's gathering in Memphis. "Yes, I was on the pole," said Fullilove. "I was having a good time, but I wasn't drinking. I was went overboard because I was trying to do the soul train. I was dancing on the pole, and I was just trying to have a good time. It was over the top, and I apologize." Don't be trying to do the soul train, baby. Brandon Roy of the Portland Trailblazers, unless he's been traded, made a brief appearance in a rap music video, but felt the need to apologize once the video hit the internet. And there were some things in it he decided he didn't want to necessarily be associated with. The basic concept, says the director of the video, is a rags-to-riches tale of upward mobility, a standard format that many have seen utilized in recent music videos. It depicts two small-time hustlers' ascension from the inner city, where the perils of drug use and fast money are more than evident, to the metaphorical use of basketball and two of the NBA's biggest success stories. There was apparently a positive reference to the use of marijuana in the video, you see. Harvard University said Friday it had found a prominent researcher, Mark Hauser, solely responsible for 8 instances of scientific misconduct. Hours later, Dr. Hauser, a rising star for his explorations into cognition and morality, said, "I acknowledge I made some significant mistakes. I'm deeply sorry for the problems this case has caused my students, my colleagues, and my university." In 2006, he wrote a book, Moral Minds, How Nature Designed Our Universal Sense of Right and Wrong. Kids, that's irony. Harvard's findings against him, if sustained, may cast a shadow over the broad field of scientific research that depended on the particular technique often used in his experiments. Wendy Lewis was found guilty of outraging public decency in her absence earlier this month, following a drunken incident in June in Blackpool, England, former servicemen dressed in medals and berets lined the entrance to the magistrate's court. She released a statement through her lawyer saying her life had been hell on earth since the incident. She urinated on the memorial to the servicemen. The statement said, "I was extremely intoxicated when I did what I did. My life has been hell on earth ever since. I was unfortunate enough to become involved in a relationship with a much older man who I later discovered abused heroin. Nothing can minimize the seriousness of what I have done. I've had two children. Both of them have been taken away from me. I realize what offense this has caused to a wider public. On that night, I had a complete lack of awareness of what I was doing. I can only apologize and apologize again." Don't urinate on a memorial cenotaph now. Come on. A San Cop... This is making alcohol look bad, isn't it? This... litany of apologies. A San Juan Capistrano beverage company apologized this week for falsely stating its Sportastic drink was among the first beverages to be approved by the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. It was not. The Reverend Joseph Breen of Nashville had a choice: retract and apologize for his statements criticizing Roman Catholic teaching on birth control and married priests, or face being forced from his parish. On Friday, the diocese announced that Breen had withdrawn his statements and apologized. He also announced his plans to retire. An American convicted of being part of a Peruvian guerrilla group was ordered back to prison after a public outcry over her being granted parole 5 years early from a 20-year sentence. Lori Burnson turned herself into police to comply with the ruling. She was freed in May after serving 15 years for her part in a foiled plot. At a hearing earlier this week, she said in Espanol, "I ask forgiveness from those who were affected by my acts. I apologize if my coming to Peru resulted in any harm." The Virology Journal published a paper speculating the woman said in the Bible to have been cured by Jesus had influenza. Now the journal has retracted the paper and apologized for publishing it online. A former San Jose fire captain and pension fund trustee fired over false travel expenses has apologized for making an incredibly stupid mistake in the wake of an arbitrator's decision upholding his dismissal. Alliant Energy has apologized for the careless application of herbicide in southeast Iowa by a contractor hired to trim plants beneath power lines. And Canada, that is to say the Canadian government, apologized yesterday to Inuit families for relocating groups from their homes in Inukjuak in northern Quebec and Pond Inlet to other regions in the high Arctic during the 1950s. Indian Affairs Minister apologized on behalf of all Canadians for the hardship, suffering, and loss they experienced as a result of the relocation. "We deeply regret the mistakes and broken promises of this dark chapter of our history," said Duncan. The federal government suggested that the move would have helped the Inuit who are having trouble surviving and hunting in northern Quebec. The apologies of the weeks, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
touch you with as costly dance snow. One up country where there's costly dance snow. One up country where there's costly dance snow. No telling how much further I may go.
How about a compromise? How about they get to build the Muslim Islamic Center near the Murrah building in Oklahoma City? You know, because we don't care about that, right? That's okay. And no Muslims were involved in bombing. No Muslims were involved in the bombing of that building. So how about that? Oklahoma City? Is that too far away? Think about it, kids. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news outside the bubble. Be interesting to know if there are any mosques near the site of the Murrah building bombing, wouldn't it? Or any churches, because I think Timothy McVeigh was a Christian. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble from The Telegraph in London, which is actually a newspaper, not a telegraph. A complex study of 500 people aged between 70 and 90 grouped them according to their measured objective risk of falling and their fear of falling. For those whose measured risk was low, the people who were anxious about falling fell over almost twice as often as those who were not worried about it. In the group whose measured risk was deemed to be high, the people classified as stoic still were less likely to fall than those who were aware of the fact that they were likely to fall. The study was conducted by a team at the University of New South Wales in Australia. The findings were published in the British Medical Journal. It found that the rate of falling in the group of people whose measured risk was low but who worried about it was almost the same as the group with an actual high measured risk of falling. The team used extensive medical and neuropsychological assessments to classify the groups and then followed them up for 1 year, counting the number of falls per month. It was found that in about a third of the cases, people overestimated or underestimated their risk of falling over. Falls in elderly people are a significant problem and can lead to broken bones and disabilities, says the newspaper, although I've always been told that at least sometimes the broken bones lead to the falling. You tell me, department. Lead author Stephen Lord wrote, "Overall, it seems that high levels of perceived fall risk may lead to future falls independent of physiological risk, and that the disparity between physiological and perceived fall risk contributes to fall risk mainly through psychological pathways." So don't be afraid of falling. And the Deputy Prime Minister of Great Britain, Nick Clegg, this weekend restated his view that the Iraq war was illegal, saying, quote, "I don't think the legality of that invasion has been proven," unquote. The Deputy Prime Minister of Great Britain. Clegg stressed it was his personal opinion, said the government did not have a view on the legality of the war. That's even stranger, don't you think? Shouldn't it have a view? Apart from the questions over the legality of the conflict, Clegg said the wisdom of the 2003 invasion, quote, "certainly hasn't been proven at all." More about this on next week's broadcast. Yes, that's what I said. Clegg voiced his strong opposition to the war last month as he stood at the House of Commons standing in for the Prime Minister at question time. His position was later disowned by No. 10 Downing Street, stressing that Clegg was articulating his individual view. But this week, as Clegg was once more holding the fort for the holidaying Prime Minister, he repeated his views on the war. During a public question and answer session in Newcastle, Clegg was asked on what basis he had decided the war was illegal. Clegg replied, "As I said at the time, and I'll repeat again, that was my own personal view. It's not the government's view. The government doesn't have a view about the legality of the war. But you can turn it on its head. I don't think the legality of that invasion has been proven. The wisdom of it certainly hasn't been proven at all. I was then a staunch opponent of the decision to invade Iraq, and I remain a staunch opponent of the decision to invade Iraq, unquote, the Deputy Prime Minister of Great Britain, who says the government doesn't have a position on the legality of the war that's kind of coming to an end. Kind of. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Tristeza, por favor, vá embora. Minha alma que chora está vendo o meu fim. Fez do meu coração a sua moradia. Já é demais o meu penar. Quero voltar àquela vida de alegria. Quero de novo cantar. Tristeza, por favor, vai. Está vendo o meu fim. Fez do meu coração a sua moradia. Já é demais o meu penar. Quero voltar àquela vida de alegria. Quero de novo cantar. Para. Está vendo o meu fim. Fez do meu coração a sua moradia. Já é demais o meu penar. Quero voltar àquela vida de alegria. Quero de novo cantar. Ai,
ladies and gentlemen, I note in sadness the closing of a great New Orleans institution, Donna's Barn Grill, a small, unprepossessing joint where you could walk in, hear brass band music, or music like this. Pretty amazing little place. Certainly hope somebody else opens it up and keeps it exactly the same. Yeah, right. That happens in this life. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave. on the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, on your computer at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, on your smartphone through stitcher.com, on available as a free download to members at audible.com/theshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like you remembering what I said at the beginning of the show and doing what you think is right, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. And thanks as always to Pam Halstead. Le Show is on Twitter at LeTwits. And I haven't had to apologize for anything I've done there yet. Hope you kids appreciated the lack of satire today. Thanks for sticking with it. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.